Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The fellas are out today. They'll be back on Monday. Luke Morrow alongside B. Scott with you instead. Figgy Fig on the steel wheels. And still time to go around the NFL here on In the Loop. You can join the conversation at any time, 713-572-4610. Week 6 kicking off last night with the Giants, handing it to the Eagles, at least in the second half, 34-17. Eagles with back-to-back losses after that 4-0 start. Giants now 2-4. The numbers that stood out most, which were pretty crazy to me, was the third down, where the Eagles were 1-for-9 on third down. Giants were, at one point, 11-for-14, and then didn't get their last two. I think one was, you know, they were just running out the clock. Do you think the Giants have something here with those two rookies, their running back and their quarterback? Do you think this is the future of football there in New York?
Well, I definitely like their rookies, right? And if you pair that with their second-year guy who, you know, I know had a rough go of it his rookie year because he didn't have the supporting cast, but if this is what Malik Nabers needs is a legit running game and a legit quarterback, and now they got a legit three-headed monster, if I'm Brian Daboll, I'm just hoping I can survive.
Yeah, right.
You know, I'm hoping I can, as an offensive guy, that I can stay around long enough to work with these tools. But more than anything, I don't know if this is just like the media part of me, but I'm looking at the Eagles like, one for what on third down? The Super Bowl champions, the guys that seem like they got all the answers between their passing game, their options in their passing game, and the fact that they got arguably the best running back in football, one of the best running quarterbacks in football. They got the tush push. They got all these things going for them
yep.
that seem like they should be better on third down. How do they not make it work? It's as optimistic as I am about the Giants' future, I got just as many questions about the Eagles and what they have going on right now.
Yeah, their offensive coordinator has had a bad year. First time as an offensive coordinator. Fourth straight year, they've had a different offensive coordinator, the Eagles. And so, like, the first year, you know, they had a good one, Shane Steichen. They get to the Super Bowl. Then they replaced him with Brian Johnson. He was bad enough. He lasted only a year. Then they replaced him with Kellen Moore. Worked out last year. Got to a Super Bowl. Won the Super Bowl. And then they replace him this year with, I can't even think of the guy's name, the offensive coordinator right now, but he's been with Sirianni for a long time, and it's been a disaster. But that's the problem when you keep trying to change these coordinators every year. You know, they're 2-for-2, and the two good ones they had got head coaching jobs because they were so good. But not every hire is going to hit. And right now, this offensive coordinator is still struggling in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's the obvious difference, right? Because it's the same guys for the most part, same personnel, and for whatever reason, and this is a big part of the conversation. Again, you know this from being up close that way. This is the conversation in Philly right now, is do they have the right offensive coordinator? They're asking that question way harder than we are here in Houston right now, I can tell you that.
Absolutely. I was just trying to get his name to be fair to him, but I guess it's better that he remains anonymous.
It's not Brian Johnson, is it?
No.
I can't remember the guy's name either now.
But it speaks to, like, the fact that they have to recycle him. It's like it's not worth committing it to memory, especially if they're not doing good.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we're barely remembering Brian Jane. I feel like Brian Johnson, I think, is a local guy. That might be the only reason why I remember his name. I think he is. If I'm not mistaken.
The current offensive coordinator is Kevin Petullo.
Yeah.
I would have never guessed that, man.
Nah. Kevin Petullo, wise guy. No, I'm kidding. I have no idea.
I think Brian Johnson was a couple years ago because Kellen Moore was last year.
Yeah, Brian Johnson went to high school in Baytown.
Yeah, because that was the thing. That was him and Jalen Hurts had that East Side connection. Jalen Hurts being from Channelview, Brian Johnson being from Baytown. I feel like they worked together when he's a kid or something. I don't know.
He was on the Cougars coaching staff in 2017 as well.
Yeah, there was a background there. So, yeah, but every other year they get it right or get it wrong.
Yeah, it's hard to just have to try to nail it every year. The tush push, by the way, I've always been against the tush push. And last night they did, four plays in a row. Now we have the whole offsides controversy. Micah Parsons tweeted that it's trash, it's not football. I'm so tired of the stupid tush push. It's not so much because of the advantage the Eagles might have. I know people point to that, like, oh, can't stop it, remove it. That's not that idea. It's just it's not entertaining. And at the end of the day, the NFL is supposed to be an entertainment product. I think it's terrible TV to watch a team line up and do a rugby scrum four plays in a row.
And see, I'm different on it because I used to find it entertaining when they first started doing it. And it was the novelty of it. They were the only team, mm-hmm. or they were the particular team doing it. I thought it was kind of cool. But after a while and over time, it's just gotten a little bit old. And now, more so than the can't stop it, then, you know, get rid of it sort of thing, it's the offsides part of it. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't think I was noticing that in the beginning. Now it's been pointed out 1,000 times how they're lining up offsides. I don't think you can just stand for that. Like, you can't just allow them to line up offsides and because they're actually gaining an advantage as opposed to just being a more physical football team, which I thought was the case in the beginning of the tush push era.
Do you feel like, I'm trying to think of a way they can kind of stop it a little bit. I don't think they should get rid of it, but do you think they should make like a limit of how many times you can do this?
Well, I mean, don't let them line up offsides.
That's first and foremost,
very easy and correctable within the framework of the rules without even having to address it. So I don't get that part of it.
Yeah, it seemed like everybody had the issue with the four straight times, like doing this play four
straight
times.
Yeah, it's just a bit much.
Yeah, but if you allow the play, I mean, how are you going to tell them what plays they can run?
I know. To me,
that kind of remind me, remember that time somebody, I think it might have been the Commanders that was trying to stop it.
Yeah.
And they kept jumping off sides.
Yeah, Frankie Louvu.
Yeah, to the point they say if you do that again. I forgot what the rule was. But
jumping off sides is a penalty. It is illegal.
It would have been a touchdown because they were at the goal line.
Yeah.
And if like three consecutive, you can't advance the football any further. They were just going to like give them the touchdown.
Yeah, so I wonder if it's something like that where you can't do this four straight times at least. Maybe two.
Yeah, that's fair.
That would require some outlawing of the play to some degree, though. Like there's no legislation of this play at all.
Yeah.
Whereas jumping off sides or trying to, you know, ambush a play like that is illegal.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I do have a problem four straight times.
Yeah,
four straight times, I'm like, all right, I understand fourth and one or maybe three, maybe third and one.
Yeah.
But four straight times, man, that's kind of rough.
And that's objectively not entertaining. Like, I think you can be subjective about how entertaining the one play is.
Yeah.
But once they do it four straight times, it's like, okay.
It's just like, what are we doing
all here, right, guys?
Man? Yeah. Y'all can't just run the ball up the middle. Y'all got Saquon, man. Y'all can't pick up a yard, man.
Yeah, I don't like it. I would go back like 20 years ago where the Bush push was a controversy because you weren't supposed to be able to push anybody from behind. That would be the thing. Just do a regular quarterback sneak. And you want to try that four times in a row, go for it. But I would ban having players behind the quarterback and then being able to come up and push the quarterback forward. That's how I would legislate it. Get it out. By the way, the other side of it, it is somewhat funny. The NFL is reviewing today the Giants, how they handled the concussion procedure last night. If you weren't watching the game, Jackson Dart had to go into the tent for a concussion, potential concussion. Russell Wilson came in for one play. He grounded a ball on third and nine. The pass wasn't even close. Everyone was booing. And then they cut to Brian Daboll, the head coach, who's flipping out on the sideline and like is motioning to like get Jackson Dart back out here. He had to apologize. Daboll like apologized after the game for how he handled it or whatever, and now the NFL's reviewing.
It looked like he was going to try to get in the blue tent with him.
Yeah.
You saw that in him and Cam Scatterboo.
I feel him on that. He's like, this is my job right here. If this dude don't finish the game and we might have a chance to Russell Wilson might throw the game a little bit, nah, man, give me my man back out on the field.
That stretch validated my preseason take or early season take that they should have just started with Jackson Dart to begin with. Don't waste any time with the Russell Wilson thing. He can be there for you if you want to view him as a reliable backup. I might even go to Jameis Winston before I do, but that's a whole nother discussion. But like, fine if you're going to have him on the team at this point, I guess. But what are you doing wasting time with Russell Wilson when Jackson Dart appears to at least be ready to play? Now he's got to figure some things out, got to have some experience and all of that. But that stretch right there validated that take of mine, I thought. Him skipping that pass that you're talking about, it was like, dude, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Get him out of here.
By the way, only a few weeks removed from throwing for like 500 yards against the Cowboys, and now nobody wants Russell Wilson to touch a football. So what does that say about that Cowboys defense? That was Thursday Night Football last night. The NFL.com, they do quarterback rankings every week. They update it each week, and they just put out their week 6 quarterback rankings. In case you're curious, C.J. Stroud is in tier number 4, ranked 16th right now. That's actually up 5 spots. He was the number 21st quarterback a week ago. Now, I do think they're doing this based off of performance so far this year. For me, when I rank quarterbacks, I still look at it as who would I rather have on my team right now. And I tell you, Stroud should be much higher still, despite what we've seen this year, than number 16.
Yeah, 16 is crazy to me, especially coming off the most recent appearances, the most recent games. Like, this is the guy, correct me if I'm wrong, that literally just won AFC Offensive Player of the Week. You're telling me that the AFC Offensive Player of the Week that's been to the playoffs in back-to-back years, won a playoff game in back-to-back years, and recently over the last couple of weeks has had passer ratings above – like 125 or whatever it's been over these last couple of weeks. Forget who the opponents were. That guy is 16th. I understand Sam Darnold has been good early with Seattle, and that appears to be working out early. But you're going to tell me Sam Darnold is 11 spots better? He's in a whole 2 tiers above C.J. Stroud. I just got a tough time. I understand he's been playing well, and the Clint Kubiak fit looks good. But you're not going to tell me that Sam Darnold is 11 spots ahead of C.J. Stroud. That's insane to me.
Yeah, the biggest problem for me was Mac Jones.
And Mac Jones, yeah.
I know Mac Jones is playing well in that Shanahan offense, but if you were drafting or starting a team today, come on, who are we taking? You're taking Mac Jones or you're taking C.J. Stroud?
Yeah.
Jones is only good, I would wager, you know, in that 49ers system or similar systems on specific teams with the right fit and pieces around him.
Yeah, which is great for the 49ers.
Of course.
Like to have a system where you have particular quarterbacks that are plug and play and they don't have to be spectacular. They can just thrive in the system.
Yeah.
Great for from a team perspective and for the 49ers, kudos to them. But if we're just evaluating quarterbacks in a vacuum, that does not tell me that Mac Jones is better than C.J. Stroud.
No, for sure. Tua's still ahead of Stroud. He was 8 spots ahead of Stroud last week. Come on. He's not 8 quarterbacks better.
I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah,
it's a weak list.
If you want to just rank them based off of numbers this year, just give us a quarterback rating ranking. What's the point of doing a power ranking? And lastly, here on Around the NFL, the Texans are not playing this weekend, so you could do a little scoreboard watching. Both these games are at noon. The Colts are at home against the Cardinals. Do the Cardinals bounce back after that debacle last week now on the road and upset the Colts? Colts are favored by 7.5. Jaguars, this is one of the games of the week. Jaguars against the Seahawks in Jacksonville at noon. Of course, the Texans' next opponent, the Seahawks as well. So that's a fun game to watch as a Texans fan. The Seahawks are favored by 1.5 on the road in Jacksonville. So root for the Seahawks and the Cardinals this week. Obviously, the Seahawks have the better opportunity to beat the Jaguars.
Yeah, I'm looking at that slate for the weekend, you know, with the Texans not playing. Man, I don't have any interest in these games outside, particularly the noon slate, let me say, because that's when the Texans normally play. That noon slate, only the division games are the ones that I'm interested in.
Yep.
Other than that, I'm like, skip on the 3 o'clock. Let's get to the night game. I can get with that. But these noon games are really, really rough, other than obviously wanting to see what the Colts can do with the Cardinals, since, you know, obviously you're chasing the Colts and you play the Cardinals at some point. And, you know, this Jaguars-Seahawks game, I think, is the game to watch if you're a Texans fan over the weekend. There's not another one that's even close.
And let me call that a tease for drafting the weekend at the end of the show.
That's right. That's fair. Fair enough.
Can't wait to pick.
Stay tuned.
Pick some of these lousy games this weekend. Sunday Night Football looks really good. Lions-Chiefs, that should hopefully be fun. That's Around the NFL. Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long by visiting ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. When we come back, there's one offseason move Nick Caserio made that's looking really good right now. I'll tell you what it is next in the loop.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
There's one offseason move Nick Caserio made that's looking really good right now. We'll let you know what that is here on In the Loop. The fellas are out today. I'm Luke Morrow alongside Brandon Scott here on a Football Friday. Figgy Fig on the other side of the glass holding things down. And you as well. Appreciate you starting your weekend with us. You can always join the conversation, 713-572-4610 on the text line, or get to us on the YouTube and Twitch chats as well. With it being the bye week, I know this is kind of the time of year some people will take time to do grades. I know Payne and Pendergast are doing that, grading Caserio at this point, you know, grading the coaching staff, grading the offense, defense, all that sort of stuff. Even though, of course, it's not even halfway through the season, but for example, like the NBA All-Star Game's not at the exact halfway point, and you do that first half, second half. Major League Baseball is not the exact, but you do first half, second half grades, so on and so forth. So I know people have been looking at grades, and some people are maybe down on Nick Caserio right now. You could point to C.J. Gardner-Johnson and Cam Robinson as a waste of $17 million between those two. But there's one offseason move that you do like that stands out from Caserio that so far through the first 5 weeks is looking really good.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that also, like, everything that you just said bears repeating. Like, you should preface this thing that I'm about to say with the fact that Nick Caserio definitely deserves, like, valid criticism for some of the offseason moves and the way, more specifically, the way that he has spent money, right? The close to $17 million that you mentioned, that is essentially wasted on, what is it, three games and uninspiring play of Cam Robinson and C.J. Gardner-Johnson, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's just a whiff, swing and miss. Even now, the Joe Mixon thing, giving him the three-year extension, and turns out maybe he only played 1 year for you and we don't know what's happening with this year. You know, that there are valid criticisms of the way that Nick Caserio has spent money in recent years, or at least over the last several months or so. But the Jalen Petrie extension is one that I'm looking at as a savvy move and a smart move by Nick Caserio, and is also one that I can remember when this news broke and when we shared it on Sports Radio 610 social channels, that it was much maligned. I saw people that were critical of this move, that don't really love Jalen Petrie as a player because he's kind of a tweener. It's hard to exactly pinpoint exactly what is Jalen Petrie. Is he a defensive back? Is he a linebacker? He's too small for that. You know, like, what is he exactly, and is he worth given $40 million, I think the deal was 3 years, $39 million. But to me, you're seeing from Jalen Petrie's play, at least five games through, that he's a critical part of this defense. He's a playmaker. He is hard to pinpoint on a position, right? Like, he's not really a cornerback. You don't love him matched up with a guy one-on-one. He's too small to be a linebacker, so he's not exactly that. But you do want him around the ball. You want him around the play, and you see the impact that he can have when that happens. The two interceptions that he had in the most recent game, and the fact that it just seems like he's always near and around the play. The three-year, $39 million deal to Jalen Petrie is one that I think was a smart move by Nick Caserio, a good move by Nick Caserio, and also one that would have been harder for me to predict, let's say, 2 years ago when D'Amico Ryans first gets here. And it looks like it's Jalen Petrie that's kind of fallen out of favor, and it's Christian Harris that's emerging as, like, the linebacker, that other guy on the defense that it looks like is going to be a part of what they're doing long term. It's kind of flipped over the last couple of years, right, as Christian Harris gets the injury, and it's hard to even notice him out there.
Yeah.
And they figured out a way to use Jalen Petrie, to utilize his strengths and more so mask his weaknesses than they ever have. So I think that was a good move by Caserio.
I'm with you on that. I remember I was in with Ron that day on the drive when the news came out, and I liked it at the time as well, and so far so good. What I do think is interesting, and so I don't want to take a positive and turn it into a negative, but that when you look at the offseason for the Texans so far, the move you highlight is just that extension for a guy that's already here. What have your thoughts been just 5 weeks in, subject to change still, but in terms of the moves or I guess the overall offseason and some of the pieces they brought in. As we already mentioned, you know, Cam Robinson, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, two of what seem to be big additions on each side of the football aren't even here anymore. Is there anything else that has stood out from the new guys that have been brought in of like, you know what, that's actually a move? Because I'll give you one just right off the top because I've already apologized here. I thought, now I'm drawing a blank. The right guy, Ed Ingram.
Oh, yeah.
Ed Ingram was one where at the time I was like, what are you doing? He got benched in Minnesota. He was been labeled that he's terrible, and he's graded right now as like the top guard in Pro Football Focus. So that's one where I raised my hand and say, actually, that was so far a good move this offseason. Credit to you, Nick Caserio. I apologize.
Yeah.
Are there others that stand out for you from this offseason?
Nah, that's the one that I would co-sign. I'd say that it came as a shock to me that, like, so after the first week, it sounds crazy to think that the Texans might be an Ed Ingram and a Christian Kirk away from being competitive in that game. Like, yeah. Who talks like that? Right. Who says something like that? And then it turns out, at least on the Ed Ingram front, that that's true. And it's hard to not think that they actually could have used Christian Kirk in that game, like a healthy version of him in that game. So, yeah, I look at those two as, like, sensible moves. I know the Christian Kirk thing has been kind of a slower burn than what people were hoping for and expecting. Obviously, he had an injury history coming in. But I'd also look on the defensive side, since I mentioned Christian Harris, EJ Speed, yes, as somebody that might be their answer at linebacker when Christian Harris just hasn't quite found it. Again, I'm not exactly sure what the deal is with that, why he hasn't figured it out as a player, if it's still like the lingering injury effect or what it is. And, of course, Henry Toa I think gives you good effort and is a fine player, but you want to have options beyond that. And so bringing in EJ Speed, Ed Ingram, certainly an underrated move, because I'm like you, and I don't know how you could have been any different with Ed Ingram, just based off of the evidence that you had. The guy, yeah, had been, he's a second round pick who was benched, you know, in Minnesota, and you're thinking, okay, so what is that going to do for you? But certainly better than Shaq Mason, and shocked to say that that looks like their best offensive lineman at this point.
Yeah, it is. I would never have thought.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You can let us know, 713-572-4610, on your thoughts of how things from the offseason have played out so far. EJ Speed was where I was going to go next, because on the text line, someone said Ingram and EJ Speed. Those, yep, are moves so far that on the margins were pretty good. And I do agree with those, along with your original point on the Petrie extension. What are your thoughts? I know you touched on it there. Christian Harris just seemed, he's played, what, 4 snaps the last 2 weeks, was a healthy scratch this past Sunday. Do you think it's just like, the injury has altered his ability? Do you think it's more just simply performance-based? Like, what, he's become a forgotten man. I don't know if he's even going to be part of the team by the end of the season at this rate. Like, what do you think exactly is what's your best theory for him?
It's the most curious case that I can think of that's not Joe Mixon-related.
Right.
It's the the Christian Harris fall-off, if you will. Like, how did that happen? And obviously you can point to the injury, but, I mean, he was back as of last year. And then you come into training camp and you're dealing with a similar thing where he's not out there, he's not involved. So you're like, okay, is he dealing with something? He's dealing with something new. It's always, and then another thing about it is it's real like a mysterious type. Every time there's a Christian Harris injury, it's real tight-lipped, not just from the team, but from the Christian Harris camp. And so you never really quite know. It's hard to get a beat on what's going on. But I will say, it's that fall off that kind of contributes to this idea of the Jalen Petrie thing. Like, those two are related to me because they're of the same draft class. And one looked like it was going to be the guy that you were going to pay, like he was going to be the guy you would invest in. You went and hired a linebacker as your, you know, as your head coach. You figure, oh, D'Amico Ryans is going to, you know, him and Christian Harris are going to be tied at the hip, and he's going to make a star out of Christian Harris.
And he had that great game against the Browns, that pick six.
You thought so, yeah, and it's like you've seen nothing since then. You know, basically seen nothing since then. They come in and brought Aziz, and I understand it's a different linebacker spot. Aziz is a middle linebacker, and Christian Harris plays a little bit off ball and is a weak side linebacker. I get that. But now Aziz is the, you know, the leader for that group, you know, and you get Henry Toa to step up in Christian Harris's absence last year when he's hurt. And now EJ Speed looks like he's jumped him mm-hmm. in the pecking order. It is hard to exactly pinpoint what it is, but it seems like it is some combination of both the injury slowing him down a little bit, because clearly if he was still the same guy physically, you'd figure they want to have him out there for that sideline to sideline ability.
Yeah.
They clearly don't. And then, you know, the performance part of it. Like, they're clearly not seeing enough of him when he is out there to feel like he should be out there more. So, to me, the Christian Harris thing is one of the more curious cases that the Texans have roster-wise right now.
I'm with you. It's been odd. What's the one offseason move Nick Caserio made that's looking really good right now for you? As B. Scott said, for him, Jalen Petrie. On the text line, somebody else mentioned the marginal moves were cool. The draft for the offensive weapons, however.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that one with Jalen Noel, because when they drafted Jalen Noel, I'm like, man, another receiver? And I thought they were kind of loaded at receiver at that point, at that time. And now I'm like, man, that was actually pretty smart, because you're not getting what you thought you was going to get from Christian Kirk. And you got Higgins, you got Noel kind of stepping up a little bit. So I thought that was kind of a good move by getting Higgins and Noel.
Yeah, and if we're giving Nick Caserio credit too, I would say that this is now the third straight year where the draft was the best thing that he did. Right, going back to the C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson year, I think that's a pretty easy one, a no-brainer.
Yeah, right.
You know, the draft was the best thing they did. I'd even look at last year, and Kamari Lassiter, you could argue, was one of their better adds. And mm-hmm. if you consider what Kalen Bullock was as a rookie, you know, that was one of their better adds, was getting those two guys in their defensive backfield. And then now, I think this year, if we're talking about their his best additions collectively, like I'm pointing out Jalen Petrie as like one particular move, but overall, the drafting of those guys that Ficky just mentioned, I think, is some of the best stuff that Nick Caserio has done.
And then we didn't even bring up Woody Marks.
Yeah,
Woody Marks is kind of coming around, too.
I'd throw him in there. Yeah, I'd throw the offensive weapons. I would throw in there as part of him, three consecutive years, the draft being the best thing that Nick Caserio did in the offseason.
And obviously, those are the two parts, the draft and free agency. I do think draft is more important, because sometimes you get more swings at it with depending on picks compared to how much salary cap space you have or how many available options for your needs in the free agent market. But then also that's how you get that cheaper talent pool year after year. You know, it's hard, especially in the NFL, to just constantly try to fill holes or rebuild in free agency by spending money every year. It's not Major League Baseball. It's not the Yankees and the Dodgers that you could just throw money at the problems every year. So I do think that's almost, if I had a GM, if I had to pick one of their strengths, either they're really good in free agency but not so much the draft, or vice versa, I think I would take this route with Caserio and the draft. Free agency then helps, you know, supplement some of those things and get you to that next level of being a Super Bowl team. But overall, I think that's the, I wouldn't say safer, but that's the way to build the team over a longer period of time, you know, through the draft, being a good drafter.
There is still that question of, is Ariante Ursary going to be the first good offensive lineman that Nick Caserio drafts?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's drafted a few.
Yeah.
He's drafted a few. This might be the first good one. Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe. Fingers crossed.
Jury's still out.
Yeah. So far. But I would say promising so far. But we'll see. There's still a long way to go. I know. That's been the bugaboo. Much like, you know, even the time in the Patriots, they always struggled. I mean, they struggle more so drafting skill players.
Yeah.
And in this case for Caserio, it's been offensive linemen. On the text line, somebody said, I feel like the Christian Kirk move is going to pay off as the season progresses. Really looking forward to seeing him breaking out. And somebody else on the text line, when talking about like the premier move of the offseason for Nick Caserio, they said Woody Marks, with some other things in there that I won't say.
I do like the Woody Marks addition. That's probably an underrated one, and one that I wish they had leaned into earlier, right? Like, it took them, seems like it. That's another criticism of the staff. It's like, sometimes it seems like it takes them longer than it should to recognize a player, specifically a running back. Like 2 years ago, it took them too long to recognize that maybe Devin Singletary was a better option than Damian Pierce. This year, the same thing with Woody Marks, as opposed to kind of wasting time with Dari Ogunbowale. You'd like for them to recognize maybe those things a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I kind of wish they took the running back position a little more serious or more 2025-ish by drafting more running backs and just kind of throwing them in there instead of just trying to look for that work Kyle or that running back that could just carry the whole load. I wish they kind of throw in a little more Woody Marks and, you know, maybe next year kind of get somebody else younger to kind of do a little run. I don't want to say running back by committee, but just kind of take it a little more serious instead of just depending on Damian Pierce
for
a couple years.
For an offense that claims like it wants to run the ball, they're going to have to do a little bit better at getting running backs in this building.
Maybe they get Breece Hall before the trade deadline with those rumors out there. Right. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, we'll see.
Stay tuned.
That's right. Keep your fingers crossed. Coming up, it's time to get to What's Poppin', and we'll do that next right here on In the Loop. The fellas are out today. I'm Luke Morrow alongside Brandon Scott, Figgy Fig on the steel wheels, and you as well with us here on a Friday. Appreciate you hanging with us on a Football Friday to kick off the weekend. 713-572-4610. To text the show throughout. What a brutal night for Philadelphia sports fans, and you probably don't feel much sympathy for Philadelphia sports fans to begin with. But as we covered earlier in relation to our question of the day, the Phillies lost last night. Their season's over. They lost on a mental mistake to the Dodgers. Bottom of the 11th, bases loaded, two outs, comebacker to the pitcher. He bobbled it, just had to throw it to first. They play on to the 12th inning. He tried to throw it home, overthrew the catcher, wasn't going to get him anyways. Dodgers walk it off on the mental mistake, and the Phillies' season is over. But more so than that, if you're watching Thursday Night Football, of course, the Eagles lost 34-17 against their division rivals, the Giants, despite being more than a touchdown favorite. And the Philadelphia Flyers lost their season opener 2-1 to the Florida Panthers. So all three teams not only losing, but losing by a 2-1 ratio. But how about this? Cities in the history of sports to have their NHL team lose, NFL team lose, and MLB team lose all on the same day. Philadelphia last night, Philadelphia 1983, that's the list.
Yeah, that's rough, damn, man. It was bad enough to where this morning when I got up, normally I tune in to Payne and Pendergast because I want to see what the fellas are talking about in the morning, but it was bad enough for Philly that I wanted to know what was going on Philly radio and what the conversation was over there. And you can believe that they are in, at least today, in panic mode because they had high hopes for the Phillies. Like it's not like they were going up against the Dodgers, and we understand that the Dodgers are one of the more impressive baseball rosters that have been assembled in recent memory. And, of course, the richest, right, or the most expensive. But it's not like the Phillies are shabby. And like they were looking at the Dodgers as like the kind of the big bad wolf that they can't beat or like this obstacle that they can't overcome. They were expecting to win that series, I feel like. And I think it was especially disappointing, not just that play, which obviously is a rough way to end the game. It led to our question of the game or question of the day of what is the roughest way, the toughest way that your team or that you've seen a team lose a game. But the fact that they weren't getting a whole lot from their trio of Turner, Schwarber, and Bryce Harper, like their top three guys, didn't really perform in this series. So just a really disappointing outcome for them. I'd hate to beat them today.
Certainly. They're almost like the Mets of the 80s, where you look back at the Mets and wonder, like, man, how do they only win one World Series? It's funny enough, the Phillies made it to the World Series with their worst team of this bunch in 2022. Since then, they've had better teams. This year is probably the best of the bunch, and they haven't even been able to get back to a World Series. You know, the Diamondbacks upset them a couple years ago. Last 2 years, they've lost in the DS. So these underperforming postseasons for the Phillies last night was the latest example.
Yeah, and I think this year they kind of got like one of those James Harden-era Rockets vibes where it's like, man, this is a team that feels like it's good enough to win a championship, but then they go up against a team like the Dodgers. But it wasn't even the fact that they were the Dodgers. It was just it was a close game. Yeah. They had a chance to win, and then they had the mental error at the end. It was not insurmountable, and yet they could not surmount it.
So the Dodgers have moved on. The Blue Jays have moved on. Meanwhile, the two other series continue. You have Game 5 tomorrow night, Cubs and Brewers in Milwaukee, 7:08 first pitch Central Time. You can see if Kyle Tucker will continue his Cubs career. And then tonight, 7:08 Central Time, first pitch on Fox, Tigers-Mariners Game 5. Tarek Skubal gets the start for the Tigers. They're favored on the road tonight. I think he's 0-2 in three starts against the Mariners this year, though, like a 5 ERA. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, if I'm a Mariners fan, I got to like my chances. And as crazy as it sounds, you prefer not to be facing the best pitcher in the game, especially in a do-or-die scenario. But here they are, and the matchup seems to be in their advantage based off of the history. So it's a peculiar case to be in because, if you look at it, Mariners not known as a prolific lineup or anything. They're not known for their hitting. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you look at it from that standpoint. But for whatever reason, baseball is weird this way, where certain lineups and certain guys match up well against others, and this is one of those. So, yeah, if I was a Mariners fan, I'd feel pretty good about it tonight.
By the way, Scooble's strikeout prop for those betting folks is 9, juiced up to the over. Seems high, but right now you could bet under 9
strikeouts.
That's
very high, especially in the playoffs.
But didn't he have 12 in a loss?
Yeah, I think so.
But both things could be true. Like, he could get a lot of swing and miss. He could get a lot of whiffs. He could strike guys out, and they still touch him up a little bit.
I want to say he had 12 or over 12 in the wild card series, too.
Yeah, yeah. And then don't forget that the Mariners, the thing that they do well is pitching, and so they are fighting fire with fire a little bit there. They don't have anybody that's as good as Scooble, but if they can kind of keep that Tigers lineup limited and just have their moments, which seems to be what they've been able to do against Scooble, then this is a doable thing for them.
Yeah, the over-under is 5.5 tonight, 5.5 runs for the game. So Vegas is not expecting a lot of offense tonight. George Kirby on the mound for the Mariners.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
you could do a lot worse than that.
George, for sure.
George Kirby on the mound on my side, and the matchup numbers that you cite against Scooble on the other at the plate, give it to me. I take it.
That's right. Should be fun tonight. 7:08. If you're an Astros fan, you can hate watch the Mariners and hope their season comes to an end. Yeah. Elsewhere here on What's Poppin', it was announced LeBron James is going to be out 3 to 4 weeks. He's going to miss the first opener to a season of his career because of sciatica, which I don't want to profile. That just sounds like an old injury. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I hear sciatica, I was like, man.
What's next? Glaucoma? Right. You know, like sciatica? What do you mean? Did he not take his blood pressure medicine? what's going on? Like, you could just see LeBron James have one of those Sunday through Saturday pill bottles or pill caps where he's got like his vitamins and his medicines that he's got to take. But this is an impressive thing that he's done so far. It makes you wonder, like, at what point does Father Time catch up to LeBron James? He is a human being, barely, somehow. Like, how does he continue to do this? Not just the fact that he's played more seasons than anybody or been around for more seasons than anybody in NBA history. Got 5,000 players or more that have played in the NBA, and this guy has played more than anybody. But he's been able to do it at this level. At some point, it's got to end. And so this could be the beginning of that.
Yeah, it seemed like it's already catching up, too, because this guy, in his career, he was never hurt this much. And like you said, this is the first time he ever missed a opener of a season.
Yeah.
So I think it's starting to be there where it's these weird, random, old injury type stuff.
He's been an Iron Man. Like, I think guys that are that great, a lot of times you just focus on the moments and the great moments and the accomplishments. And look, when you're that talented, it's easy to overlook the durability and the Iron Man aspect of it. But that is something that I think LeBron James deserves credit for, especially when we talk about a softer society, but particularly the NBA, like the guys don't play as much and load management and all of that. This is a dude that has shown up for the most part for 23 years.
Yeah. Well, the skeptics believe that this injury is really just shortening his season instead of worrying about the first month of the season. Like, let's just turn it into a whatever that would be, a 65-game season.
A Kawhi Leonard type of deal.
Right.
But would you do that to start the season? Like, there's a little bit more to just basketball here, like the whole business entertainment aspect of it. And it's not their job to necessarily care about that part. But, yeah, it surprises me that even if that was the case, that they would choose the beginning of the year and the first month of the season to do it. It's not like the Lakers are coming off some amazing season, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought the whole narrative was that LeBron James' time was ticking and he needs them to be competitive and he's worried about the direction. They just changed ownership. Like, I thought there was supposed to be some kind of sense of urgency for the Lakers.
Yeah, and I thought maybe they probably would want him to play at least the first couple weeks to kind of get it going a little bit.
Yeah.
And it seemed like now he's going to be out, 2 to 3 weeks? And then when he come back, you got to ramp it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know how the Lakers going to be without LeBron. But I don't know.
And the Luka trade feels like a long time ago now, yeah. But it's not like they've played a ton of games together.
No.
They probably should do that more. You know, I don't know. It's a weird thing.
By the way,
he's old though. I mean, so that part's not weird. He's old man.
Yeah, yeah. It might just be actual sciatica for him at this point in his career. I woke up this morning, and as I always do, I wake up, I check like the ESPN app, like, oh, what's going on today? What sort of games? What do we have tonight? Also, I do look at the betting markets because I'm a degenerate. And so I was looking at the NBA preseason slate. There was a game going on this morning when I woke up. I had no idea there was like a preseason game being played in China. It was 7 a.m. this morning. They're already in the second quarter. I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah, they could do a much better job of like marketing that, especially. And maybe it was just a bigger deal for China.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, maybe this is like for China. But yeah, man, I'm not used to being up that early and ready to watch basketball.
Yeah, right.
Basketball is an afternoon at the earliest and preferably at night type of thing. You can get me with some day baseball. And I'm starting to get used to the London games, the international games that the NFL plays. And those are obviously once a week because it's football. But an early morning NBA game is just against my nature. As much as I love the NBA.
Yeah, unless you're in the Olympics or something like that and they're playing over in Tokyo.
Yeah.
I'm good on that.
And that's
that.
The Olympics. You know, it's not just basketball. You understand it's the Olympics going on.
Yeah.
It's basically sports from the time I wake up till I go to sleep.
Yeah,
so that's all
day long. You might catch some basketball at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, that's the only time. I remember being in a hotel room on a family vacation and being woken up early because the family wanted to watch the Olympic basketball. And I was like, it's like 6 a.m. I still want to sleep. It's vacation. Yeah. But this morning, the Suns beat the Nets 132-127 in overtime.
Yeah, so it was a good one.
In China. Yeah, they got a good one over there.
I wonder what Jalen Green was doing.
Did he play? I don't know if he did.
That's something we're going to be keeping the eye on all season, too, because, you know, it was a lot of Jalen Green stands here.
Yeah, so, he didn't play in that first one and in the previous preseason game. It doesn't look like he played in this one either.
Yeah, doesn't look like it.
Yeah.
I know. That was like at the start of the baseball season. A lot of people, including like Payne and Pendergast, were tracking how Alex Bregman and Kyle Tucker were doing on the other teams. It could be similar this year to see.
Yeah.
And then you take your, you take your victory lap. You feel better. It's like you won the relationship potentially, depending on how things go here in Houston.
Yeah, I think they did. It's almost out of sight, out of mind. Like it almost like it never happened. And I'm rooting for him. There's nothing against Jalen Green. He's perfect. I thought he was perfectly fine here in terms of like interpersonally and how he did. There's no axe to grind there. No like rooting against like maybe with some other players that get jettisoned out of town. But it certainly feels like already they've won that one. Just based on how much easier things look
crazy,
for the Rockets.
The crazy 100%. Thing is, Jalen Green I thought he had a good year last year.
Yeah.
But I just feel like the way this team is built, you can't really win with him.
Well,
like
the ending ruined all of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Like the playoffs.
The seven games ruined the however many some odd games that he played in the regular season.
Yeah.
It's hard to get past that.
Yeah. Yep.
Kind of goes back to that Kershaw conversation, the smaller sample size of the postseason undoing, the larger sample size of a regular season.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of basketball, they just came out with a NBA GM survey on NBA.com. And the Rockets ranked second in one interesting category that stood out to me. I don't know if I agree. We'll talk about it next. It's In the Loop.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.